Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to The Thriving Marriage. I'm Heather Choate with Mark Johnston. How's it going, Mark?
I'm doing wonderful this week. How about yourself?
Doing good. We were just talking about how fall is in the air. It's starting to get a little bit colder. I'm excited for the changes. But yeah, I hope that you guys are doing well no matter where you are in the world. Today we're going to be talking about five signs of a strong and healthy relationship. And I'll admit, this is really refreshing to me. I'm sure it's refreshing to you, Mark. We are the ICU for marriages, right? So we often talk about how to save your marriage and like what to do when your spouse wants out. And so this is really refreshing to talk about a strong and healthy relationship and what we call a thriving marriage. But before we get to that, though, we're going to share our client win of the week. Mark, you want to share this one?
Yeah. This one is coming from an anonymous client of ours. They're saying, "Hey guys, I've been on PATH program for about a week now, and I've got to say, I'm pretty shocked at the turnaround I have noticed. Slowly but surely opening up communication with my wife. Just this morning, she initiated conversation via text about our puppy, but there were little jokes in there and some playfulness. I'm choosing to take this as a win. Still a lot of work and ground to cover, but stay in the course." And yeah, like I like this because there can be some quick turnarounds with just a little bit of some nudging and, you know, just some small adjustments. Now, not everyone's going to be in that boat, but absolutely, like we, especially with the PATH program, we like to make sure that like, hey, let's get these little adjustments in and see if we can get some of that quick turnaround. So I'm glad, you know, this person is seeing some great success there.
Yeah, it's delightful to me as well. It's kind of one of our intentions is to help you guys see a difference within just the first few weeks to get things going in the right direction. And so we'd love to see that when that happens, and it happens often, which is really fun. All right. So now we asked you guys over in our Thriving Marriage Facebook group, what are three things that you think makes a strong and healthy relationship? And we got a lot of comments there. And it was really fun to read through those. So if you're not a member of the Thriving Marriage Facebook group, go ahead and join now because it's an incredible community. So Mark, what did you see as you read through some of these comments?
Well, I saw a lot of specifics, but there definitely was some themes. You know, if we look underneath what those specifics, what it was really about. I think a lot of the things that I was seeing was comments around communication, like whether it's we talk about our problems or we don't go to bed, you know, unhappy or something along those lines. There was a lot of comments around communication. There's a lot of around commitment. And I see this as, you know, making sure that no matter what happens, you're working through things and having that kind of value that I'm standing for the relationship, even, you know, through thick and thin. A lot were commenting on intimacy, though some were calling this by different names. They're talking about it in terms of vulnerability or closeness. And certainly, I think that's a really great sign. I think one of the things I really appreciate about my own marriage is just the feeling of being able to be close with my wife. I also saw a lot of themes of compassion, liking each other, having some focus on each other's needs. You know, so a lot of different things. And I think all these are really good answers. I'm here to say, you know what? I think I have a better take on this than all of you. And I get, but, you know, I think these are all good answers. And I think they're right in line with a lot of, you know, what we say generally. And I think what a lot of other experts say as well.
Yeah, agreed. So Mark, in like previous podcasts, even just the last several ones we've done recently, we've talked about our five pillars or foundations of a healthy relationship. And we are going to touch on those really briefly, but then we're going to go a little bit deeper into some signs that you can look for that things are going really well and why each of those signs are so significant. But for those that maybe haven't heard the other episodes or just need a refresher, what are those five foundations of a healthy relationship that we found?
Yeah, exactly like what you said. I I felt like we had already treaded on this stuff several times in the past. And you know, like a lot of actually what the comments were right about, like these foundational sort of ideas that you and I talk about. But yeah, these were fulfillment, like how well do the wants and needs of each person feel supported and built up in the relationship? There was feedback, as in, can the two of you appreciate those good moments? And can you discuss problems and concerns? That's that communication piece. You know, we talk about intimacy, how to be open, vulnerable, how close you can be within your relationship. We also talk about positive regard, like as in, is there forgiveness and acceptance? There's an assumption of positive intentions. How do you view each other? And then lastly, commitment, like how willing are you to work through things even when it's rough? And yeah, like I said earlier, I think a lot of the comments mirrored a lot of these things that we've been talking about, you know, for the last month or two. I can't remember how long we've been kind of pushing on that one. But yeah, I think, yeah. You know, like, in case you didn't know, this is what we think makes a good, healthy marriage.
Yeah. And as you're hearing these, I'd love to hear any comments that you guys have as you're watching this on YouTube or Spotify or iTunes, wherever you're watching this. Let us know what you think about those five pillars. Do you feel like any are lacking in your marriage currently? Which ones do you think might be going really well? And then we'll go deeper into that with you. We always answer every single comment that we get. And so we were more than willing to help you with those things. If you feel like, we're kind of lacking on the intimacy, or no, we do not have positive regard for each other. No, it's not very fulfilling. We can't give feedback. My spouse doesn't have commitment. Whatever it is that you're going through, we will give you solutions to that. So these are great places to focus on, right? If you're trying to fix things and try to create a happy, balanced relationship. Today, though, we're going to talk about some signs that things are going really well and why these signs are so significant. What I also like about this is that we look for these with our clients, usually not right off the bat because there's more work that usually is done before they get to this stage. But we do look for some of these signs with our clients' marriages as well. So the first one is seeking each other out. Mark, what does that really mean? When your spouse is seeking you out and you're seeking your spouse out?
Well, I think this is really a good sign that the relationship does feel fulfilling. You know, especially if you and your spouse are interested and curious about each other, you know, it's just this kind of sign that things feel rewarding when I'm around my partner. And I very much think that like it's that a lot of that is around that idea of fulfillment. It's just this kind of indication that, hey, we like being around each other. And I know I've said this in the past, like I think this concept, my wife and I like to comment on this a lot, my wife Jen and I. Like the big thing between Jennifer and myself is we actually like to express this sentiment of, I like you. I like being around you. And oftentimes we make comments like, that feels even better than the expression of love. Like, certainly there are many moments where I feel love towards my wife. But there are also very moments where I just absolutely, it feels good to be there. And I think those are two different things. And I think a big part of what makes, like what really, at least for Jennifer and I, like what keeps things going, what keeps it moving smoothly is this concept that like most any time, if I'm having a rough day, it's easier to be around her than not. And so, yeah, oftentimes she and I are seeking out each other's company, and it feels nice, oddly enough, right? But it can really just feel very gratifying, even just hearing that my wife enjoys being around me, enjoys my company, it feels good. So what, like, here's this sign, Heather. I don't know what you see with your husband, Ben, but why do you think this is such a positive sign here?
Well, like you said, when we enjoy being around each other, that indicates that there's like these higher levels of fulfillment, right? We feel more fulfilled in the relationship. We both enjoy being in the relationship, right? And Mark and I, you know, we and our coaches here, we've coached tens of thousands of couples now. And so we have a lot of experience and evidence on what's going on in our relationship. And from what we've observed and what we've kind of researched, we've noted that people who have high amounts of fulfillment tend to be committed to the relationship. This is another reason why, if you are familiar with our four steps to save your marriage from divorce, commitment is the last piece. Because if you don't have this fulfillment and this desire to be around each other, if your spouse doesn't want to be with you and even like invent excuses just to be around you, then commitment is going to backfire, because we have to want to be together in order for it to work, right? You don't want to just force your spouse to be committed to you. You don't want to like manipulate them or coerce them or like pressure them into giving you that commitment. You want them to want you. You want them to want the marriage. And so that's why it's really important that we build this up first in the relationship before we get to commitment. And the higher levels that you have of that kind of fulfillment, then the higher levels of commitment exist, because it's just naturally born out of desire. They naturally want to be with you. So like for Ben and I, it doesn't even really matter what we're doing. We just like to do it together, whether that's running an errand, you know, going to get the car washed, like, do you want to come? And I'm like, you know, we feel like a puppy, like jumping into the truck, like, yeah, I want to go with you. I just want to be around you. It's kind of that puppy love of, I just like to be around you. I like to know where you are and what's important to you. And oftentimes we often hear that, you know, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. And that's again, why I also like the I like you statement, because it's like, I actually like you and I love you. I like being around you. I like sharing things together. I like this connection that we have. So that's one of the things that we look for as a relationship is healing as well, is that you're naturally wanting to spend more time with each other, that you're seeking each other out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. So what about the second one here? We got openness, trust, some ability to share anything. What do we think about this? I mean, you know, a lot of these signs are kind of reflecting back on these foundational sort of principles. But absolutely, like, if I think here, Heather, the more that you can share with your partner and feel okay about that sharing, I think this is absolutely a great sign that things are going well. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think at the core of every human being, like, we want to be loved and accepted for who we really are, not for what we do or what we say, but we want to be accepted for who we are, right? And being able to share anything with your spouse and share vulnerably that true inner part of yourself and have it be accepted, right? And this gets even better though when things are shared and there's a respect for what is shared. And that's a sign of a very healthy relationship, even if it is something you might not even agree with or even fully understand. But if you can respect it, then that helps them feel safe to share even more. And when you feel respected in what you shared, then you feel safe to share even more. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, I think, and I hate to keep pointing back at my own relationship, because I don't want to give this impression that like my marriage has been without bumps or anything, or without some amount of rockiness. But yeah, like, I think, you know, the way Jen and I approach a lot of this is almost like a sense of sacredness around the life that we're sharing together, the things that are shared. This might sound terrible, but I know like Jen has these conversations with like her female friends and will be like, I want to tell you, Mark, about what my friend said. And even though they said, don't share it with anyone, you don't count as anyone. You don't count as a person that I'm sharing with. And, you know, a large part of that is because, you know, there's this understanding that whatever is shared here between her and I, we know it's not going to go anywhere else unless it absolutely has to. And we've built that up. We know like where those lines are. So there's a lot of respect. You kept using the word respect, Heather, and I think that's a really good word here. Why I think this is a really important sign, I think it really shows what the relationship means to each individual. Basically, a lot of that openness translates to creating a sense that the relationship is special or unique. It's something that other lesser relationships can't really provide, like friendships or coworkers. Because if I'm able to be open about anything, and I know that I'm going to feel accepted and not just, you know, understood at the same time, that's a very, I think, unique sort of position that your marriage can be in. I think it shows each partner that special nature, that we're able to interact or share more with each other than we can with other people, whether that is emotions or information or, you know, being a little bit more physical and sexual. You know, like those are all forms of like openness, trust, intimacy, and whatnot. I don't know, like I imagine like you and Ben probably have some similar sort of principles or values within your relationship. I don't have any sort of monopoly here, I imagine.
Right. And just like you were sharing, you know, like your marriage isn't perfect. We didn't always have that. And sometimes it's still, you know, a progressive type of thing. I think I shared a couple of weeks ago, like, okay, Ben, I've got something really scary that I want to let you know. Like, I want to tell you something that feels scary to me to tell you this, right? And then as I share it and he respects that and he gives the reward for my openness, that then gives me a feeling of security and trust to be more open and vulnerable. The next time I feel like I have something sherry, scary to share, it's very sherry. So that's what helps create that intimacy cycle and the positive momentum, right? That we talk about an intimacy cycle is mm-hmm. that you are more vulnerable. That's rewarded positively. That encourages you to be more vulnerable. And then your spouse is vulnerable. You reward that positively. Then they're encouraged to be more vulnerable, right? That creates that openness and that trust and the ability to feel safe to share anything. And the opposite side is true, right? That isn't rewarded. Mm-hmm. Then that's the sign of a weak or unhealthy relationship, the deterioration of a relationship when you start to withdraw or hold back, not say how you really feel. You share something, you know, vulnerable and it isn't met well with respect or with a positive regard, right? Then you do not feel safe to open up and share anymore. So yeah, that's a little bit.
Yeah. And I think like essentially like what you said and what I've noticed for myself, it's almost like working through some of the difficult things or sharing, being able to share difficult feelings successfully really allows for more openness. And, you know, much like you said, you work things through with Ben. I mean, Jen and I, we've had professional sort of intervention, like therapists or coaches or something, on three separate occasions in our 17 years together. Like not like three sessions, but like on three separate times, we were like, okay, let's get some support. Let's get some help. And a lot of that, I think a lot of that is what has allowed us to be to feel very open now. Not because we didn't have problems, but because we had them and we worked through them to completion. We handled them well. And I think that really is a great sign of openness and trust and a wonderful sign for a healthy relationship.
Right.
Kudos to us, right?
Yeah. But here's where we're kind of getting down to the nitty gritty is that like most people, you dream about this and you crave this, but most people do not experience it. And like, we're not trying to put ourselves on a pedestal, but we are trying to model what actually works. And from people that do have healthy and successful relationships long-term, because it's really not taught. I think I say this almost every week, but it's really not your fault if you aren't there right now. If you haven't experienced this or it feels so foreign, it feels so far from where you are because it isn't modeled to us. It isn't taught in school. Our society isn't supporting this and valuing this even. And the people that, you know, are trying to do things often don't even know that what they're doing is ineffective or backfiring. So it just leaves a lot of confusion. So what we're trying to do is cut through that confusion and give you these surefire signs that this is what it takes to have a strong and healthy relationship. These are signs that things are going in the right direction. Because once you model from those people that have that, what you want, right? Then you can learn how to have it too. And it's really nothing special about me or Ben or Mark or Jennifer or any of our thousands of clients that have done this as well, because we've all been like to the pit of relationship trauma and relationship heartache. And again, it was really learning these skills, learning how to work through these things and building up these healthy foundations that have created such healthy, strong relationships for us. So it is important to model from those that have gone before you and and learn from them what it takes to get to where you want to go.
Right. Number three, sex, intimacy, and physical affection is still meaningful. Now, I think that a lot of people, especially in much longer term relationships, it certainly can get to a point where sex has devolved into like checking off the box or something one has to do. And, you know, you've all heard the jokes and the stereotypes and of these kind of flat, boring sort of relationships that have, you know, the long-term relationships. Now, I think like where I think this is becomes a really healthy sort of sign, a good sign, is when there's balance. I think placing too many expectations and focus and needs around sex, you know, often a sign of other problems, isn't good. I've certainly spoken with, you know, this is not an uncommon conversation. I can remember even talking to at least a couple, two or three different people where that was like a big concern within their relationship within the last week. You know, this idea that we're not, you know, this part of our relationship isn't healthy. And almost always there's a huge amount of expectations and focus and needs around that area. You know, if we want to balance that out, the other part of this is like not recognizing the connecting power of that part of the relationship, making it seem unimportant or simply going through the motions, you know.
Or not having sex at all, right?
Yeah exactly.
Like, eliminating it from your relationship completely. We often see that as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're on one side, it can be like way needy and like there's a whole lot of expectations around it. And the other side is, it doesn't really matter. And in the middle, I think it's meaningful intimacy where each partner is able to feel close, focused on each other, interested in creating this pleasurable sort of experience for the other person. I think in this area, when there are problems that happen, we can see that there are problems here, obviously. And if you look up divorce statistics, you see that this is that incompatibility around sex is up there in listed reasons for divorce. And a poor sexual life, while not everything, it can make it harder to feel connected or as though that there's passion or romance. So that's really, I think, what it's about. And I think it becomes really easy to just fall into routine, or whether that's a routine of not having sex or just, you know, it just needs to happen. And it really shows something special when there is a little bit of a focus there, and that is still valued, and it's still in the couple, they're still excited about that part of their relationship. I think a big piece of this is it's in large part, you know, like what we as a society, we say, this is the difference between, you know, us in a marriage versus us in other relationships. Now, obviously that's not the entirety of it, but that's a very big common distinguishing factor. And we say, okay, if we have this kind of interaction with other people, that must mean that, you know, that must mean that your marriage isn't good. I think most everyone agrees that. Now, unless you're going way off into the wilderness of like the swinging lifestyle or having an open marriage, and we're not even going to touch on that. Right? Not generally a healthy way of doing things, generally. Oh, I'm trying to be diplomatic there.
Right.
I think, you know, some people can be emotionally close with others. I think some people can develop deep friendships. But that fulfilling sex life is something that we usually reserve for those long-term, committed, romantic, generally, you know, depending on how religious you are, where your values are, you know, married relationships. And without that aspect, I think your marriage loses some of its unique qualities. So I think very much so, it's a sign of a good and healthy relationship if this is good and healthy itself.
Right. I think another enemy to this is that there's just so many lies and misunderstanding around sex in our culture. There's even like desensitization. I can't talk today. whatever that word is, where you're desensitized because we're just bombarded with sexual messages so much in media, pornography, you know, Hollywood, all of that stuff. And so really understanding what that unique connection is and having that be something that's very sacred and protected and valued in a marriage is really important. Another thing that we often see too is that sex can be used as like a weapon, and you never want to do that. If you're withholding sex or, you know, engaging in any kind of unhealthy behavior there, then that's definitely not going to be leading you to the strong and healthy relationship that we're talking about. So yeah, it's a very deep, personal and intimate part of the relationship that does make it unique from other relationships, and it should be protected and understood for what it really is. All right, our fourth one here. Oh, go ahead. One more comment there.
And I'm going to make an observation because I'm sure a lot of people are like, I wish that part of my relationship was in a better place. And you know what? I would say almost always when that's not going well, I hear over and over and over again, the partner who's letting it, who's not quite as focused on sex, they expressed to me that they're like, they didn't know that it was that important. They didn't know it was that big of a need. And so, you know, I'm going to just point this out and saying, hey, there's actually generally a lot that you can do when you are able to sit down and really work through some of those issues. I think a lot of people would much rather work through an uncomfortable conversation like that rather than face the prospect of separation, which is what a lot of people wait till it gets to that point. So just want to make that point there. Anyway.
Yeah, agreed. I'm going to make one other side point. We're talking about, you know, as a bit of a side thing, because this is where we tend to focus on with you guys in the podcast and what most of you are experiencing, is that this kind of the sexual intimacy, physical intimacy tends to come later in the marriage restoration. It's one of the things that typically comes after we work on some other things. So pushing for it too soon can often backfire. But then when it feels really normal, natural, and right, then it's an amazing way to deepen the connection. It is a sign that things are going in the right direction.
I'm gonna reinforce. I know I made an aside, you made an aside. I'm gonna reinforce that one thing one more time, because I did just talk with someone. I had the couple in, you know, both the husband and wife, and one of the partners was really upset that early on in the process of reconciliation that sex wasn't resuming immediately. And so, that's not coming out of nowhere, Heather.
Right.
Your comment there.
Right. We do see that. Like, why aren't they holding my hand? Why aren't they hugging me? Why aren't we making love every night?
It was even, why aren't they, you know, I told them that the whole reason I'm leaving is, you know, our sex life isn't good. You know, I'm working on this now. Why isn't this happening yet? It was like a week or two.
Yeah. It takes a little more time is what we typically see. All right. Let's now go to the fourth one, which is acceptance. I love acceptance. Acceptance is all about how much you recognize that your partner is their own person with their own preferences, choices, and opinions. I feel like I got smacked up the head with this one. I don't know why, but this is really important to recognize that your partner is different than you, right? And sometimes this means that there's forgiveness when those opinions clash, and there's some grace to recognize that they are who they are. And so even better than that, though, is the ability to even appreciate differences. That's even another level up from just accepting differences. Yeah. So Mark, any thoughts on this, and why is this a great sign?
I can think of like very specifically moments where I look at my wife and I love her for her spontaneity and just being able to create, you know, like a nice environment out of nothing. But like the flip side of that spontaneity is, you know, if I'm going to, you know, I'll do a lot of the cooking for dinner. If I'm going to look for like the salt or the spices, and I have to look in five different places to find the salt, you know, or some other sort of spices for the dinner. Like, this is me like saying, okay, look, I can appreciate these parts that like, yeah, like if my wife was more organized, she probably wouldn't be as spontaneous and fun and just all those other parts of it. Why I think this is a great sign is just, you know, I wonder how many of you might feel like you're a bit on guard at times interacting with people in general. And a large part of that guardedness is concern. Okay, maybe I'm making some conjecture here, some assumptions. I think a large part of that guardedness is concern about whether you're going to feel accepted. And I think having that great amount of acceptance in your marriage really provides this space for calm, a sense of relief that you can just be okay, even if your faults or problems are apparent. I mean, this is all what we kind of want with a long-term relationship. We want to feel like no matter what happens, things are going to feel stable. That if I, you know, if we have little annoyances, it's going to be okay. I mean, to me, I don't know about everyone. I can't speak for everyone, but that feels hugely calming and stabilizing. And it just kind of gives you this sense of warmness. Like everything is fine because I know I can come to this person and there's not going to be judgment here. I don't know. Right. What do you think? Like, is this just important? Is this that big of a sign that this is a really strong point in a relationship?
Yeah, I was just trying to look up. I was just reading and I wish I could quote them. So I'll try to put it in the comments if I look up later, because I like to try to reference who I'm quoting. But it's a psychologist and sociologist who's talking about the power of the tribe and how human beings were so wired to belong to the tribe. Right. And we all know, like, this comes from, like, anciently, those that were off on their own would die. Like, they would get eaten by a wolf, or they would starve in the winter, right? So being part of a tribe meant protection, it meant safety, it meant security. And so we are so wired to be part of the tribe and not be outcasted. So I think it's our own, like, biology, our own wiring that we've inherited over all these generations of time that really make this a big focus of our brain. And the psychologist was showing actually how much of the brain's resources are devoted to the sense of belonging, that we're always looking, am I accepted here? Am I, you know, is there a sense of belonging here, or am I going to get kicked out of the tribe? Right. And so, when we're in the tribe, we do get that relief from that fear of being kicked out, that fear of isolation, the fear of death, the fear of abandonment, the fear of rejection, the fear of not being good enough. Right. And so just knowing that that's kind of going on in our brain all the time is just a big piece of awareness. Right. And so really knowing that we can be accepted for who we are and that we accept our spouse for who they are gives an immense sense of that freedom and that relief and that security to kind of soothe that part of your brain. Like, you're okay. Like, no matter what happens, I've got you. Like, I'm not abandoning you, and you're safe to be who you are. Right. And so acceptance in our marriages is really crucial in order to have that feeling of safety and security. And when we feel like we are being criticized, or, you know, our spouse does not accept us for some reason, that can be very threatening and make us feel that sense of abandonment or rejection. So being very careful and mindful of that. Now, I like even taking this a bit higher though, Mark, like you talked about, with like appreciating differences, right? Not just accepting them, but actually appreciating them. I mentioned at the beginning of this section here, I felt like this was really hard for me to come to terms with. I don't know why it took me so long to realize that, like, Ben is very different than me and that was okay. And then that was like the level of acceptance. Like, it's okay that Ben's different than me in these areas. And now even evolving into, I actually really appreciate those differences. He is a little more spontaneous as well. He brings a lot of this fun and adventure and presence. That really brings a lot of beauty and joy to my life. If he was exactly like me, then that would be completely boring and probably miserable. Right. So really learning to accept Ben for who he is and appreciating those differences is a really beautiful thing. And again, a sign of a strong and healthy relationship. Mark, what have you experienced?
Yeah, I think, so Jen and I have kind of discussed this sort of principle and come to terms with this. And I really like what Carl Jung has to say on things like this. It's a very like Jungian sort of principle. I don't know if you're familiar with him much at all, but like he talks about like this shadow self. And I'm drawing a blank on the title of the book now, but there's a whole book about this concept of like where like us having strengths and there being like shadow version, like shadow sides of those strengths. Like I was talking about with my wife, where she's very spontaneous and fun and can create plans on an instant. But, you know, the shadow side of that is that there's a disorganization and there's not a lot of planning that. So it's a little bit harder to know what to expect when what's coming up. And so I think a big part of having acceptance there over some of the differences is recognizing that a lot of the things that we're attracted to in our partner might also be related to those things that annoy us.
Right.
Coming to terms with that, like maybe I don't want my wife to be more organized, because if she is, you know, that strength wouldn't shine through quite as much. And coming to this point where I'm like, it's okay, and this can be like our little, you know, pet peeve that doesn't really mean anything. And so I really kind of like that idea in trying to find acceptance with people and saying, okay, here's this thing that's really frustrating about them, but do I actually want it to change? Because it would mean a lot of other things as well. So
I like that a lot. Yeah. Giving them some grace for those things that are the shadow side of the positive things that drew us to them, or that we really do love and appreciate about them. I think that's really beautiful. I like that. All right. Five, valuing balance within the relationship. Okay. Now this one, I think we should handle with a little bit of care here, because a desire to help things feel fair, even if it isn't always 50-50, right? And it's There's not really so much about
things that we say about that. Yeah.
Fair. But it has to do with making sure that you are both supporting each other during different times and in different situations. And it has a lot to do with meeting each other's needs and having like that deeper level of commitment, no matter what happens, right? So a lot to do with consideration and respect.
Yeah. And that's the bigger piece here. Like, you're right. I'm glad that you're like approaching this with some care here, Heather, because it's not, things are never going to be perfectly balanced. And actually, if that's too much of a concern, it starts getting into unhealthy areas as well. Like we start getting into scorekeeping or, you know, things like that, where it can really turn south very quickly. I think the better piece of this, like where this becomes like a really good sign, is not that is everything divided down the middle. Is their desire to help things feel fair. And I think that that's a big difference. I think that's a big, big difference, because it's much more about like, am I considerate of how my partner feels here? Am I wanting to put in effort to make it feel good for them? Much more than, you know, where's this line here where I've given more than my spouse has, and I want to be careful not to cross that line, because I don't want things to be unfair in that way. You know, I'm creating boundaries and I'm not going to give too much of myself. You know, we don't need to get into all that. It's that other piece.
Yeah.
So like I said, you know, why this is a good sign, it's if your spouse is trying to work towards making things feel balanced, it's because they're demonstrating concern and care. They want you to feel good. They're concerned about your well-being. And, you know, the flip side of that, we don't want it just to be, you know, are you giving? But, you know, where we have that balance is their concern to respect themselves and to make sure that they feel good as well. Because we can go way too far in that direction where people are feeling like they're giving too much and there's too much concern for their partner. And that can be a good, you know, like a, you know, this downfall as well. But right. I hope we're explaining things well here, and you all are getting like what we're talking about. I think we are, right?
I hope so. I think so. I think it's really like, I'm going to be there for you and help you and support you. And you're going to be there for me and help me and support me. And that's going to look like a lot of different waves throughout life, right? Mm-hmm. There's sometimes a lot of intensity, times when one partner is unable to do as much to meet your needs as maybe they would like to, maybe due to sickness or some kind of, you know, life event that happens. You guys know, a lot of you know, like our story about going through cancer, right? And that was a time of a lot of imbalance, right? If you look at it like, am I contributing 50-50 to this relationship? No, I wasn't contributing 50-50 to like anything for a period of that time, right? And so Ben was willing to support and to be there and to help create that sense of well-being in those tumultuous times. Now things have changed again, right? And I think a lot of this comes down to sometimes some roles and expectations that we take on or have just like this preconceived notion about sometimes, right? That I'm going to do this, you're going to do that. The man does this, the woman does that, right? And any of that is going to go more into the scorekeeping and other things that are going to not serve you in a happy way. Like I have this, this big change in my life right now with Ben. He's now gone 18 days out of the month, like gone. He's now flying corporate jets. Whereas before our entire marriage, he was home every night. Right. So the roles have changed. And if I took the role to mean like the relationship, then we could be in a lot of trouble because the roles can shift, right? The expectations, the different things that we're doing to balance the household or manage the household, I mean, or like, you know, run the finances or however, like you do things, right? Those things can change. But the underlying element here is that we want each other to be well. We want to meet each other's needs. We want both of us to feel happy and fulfilled in the relationship. And that level of give and take does create this kind of like balancing act, maybe is more of like the word than trying to keep everything balanced, right? It's more of like this ebb and flow of just this love and support. And when you have that, it does lead to greater amounts of a sense of fulfillment, right? I really feel supported and fulfilled here. And I hope my partner feels supported and fulfilled here. And as you both feel that, you have a greater amount of commitment to each other. And I think that's why this desire to have that balancing act, really important.
I think that's a much better way of describing it. It's more like going to be an ebb and flow, and it's the focus on making things feel like the process of trying to balance things out continually rather than is it balanced in the moment?
Yes. Yeah. Right. Like having this like bigger, broader perspective. And sometimes like that commitment comes even when there's a lot of maybe quote unquote imbalance based on the perceived notions of roles. You know, I've seen some people where their spouse becomes like a paraplegic for life, but their love doesn't change, right? The roles change, the expectations change, the responsibilities might change, but your love, your commitment, and your care for one another does not change. So let us know in the comments if you've experienced that kind of ebb and flow in your relationship, and if you would like more support to help things feel maybe a little more balanced, like you have the ability to receive your needs met from your partner and they have the ability to get their needs met. So you can both feel that sense of fulfillment and commitment to each other. All right, let's go on to our marriage myth buster. This one is conflict means a lack of love. In other words, like if we're fighting, we must not love each other. If there's any kind of tension, there's something wrong. What is the truth about this myth, Mark?
Sure. We're calling it a myth, and yet there can be truth to this. Like conflict can mean that there's a lack of love. But I think there's a distinction here. And I think it only really means a lack of love if you're approaching conflict in unhealthy ways. I think the reality is that conflict merely indicates differences in priorities. That's like just, if we're just looking at conflict and what its significance is, it's that I'm prioritizing one thing, you would prefer a different priority in the situation. You know, these differences in priority, they can often actually be discussed and resolved. So let's pretend like my wife, Jen, and I are arguing over chores. The real thing at play here might be simply, you know, perhaps myself prioritizing relaxation over having an orderly home. And nowhere in that describes any inherent lack of love. The lack of love comes then when there's an inability to have consideration for what one spouse is wanting to be prioritized, or perhaps an inability to accept that sometimes your partner might have a different priority or preference. So when you start dreading that conflict, I believe it's because you might fear that it means pulling further apart. It means not being considered, like your priorities not being considered, and you know, having to retreat as a result of that. And you got to remember that it doesn't need to mean that. It doesn't mean that you're going to pull apart. It doesn't mean that things are going to get worse, as long as you are creating some space for each person's priorities to be addressed. So you have a lot of control over this if you can handle it in that way, if you're creating that space. So just the suggestion, a tip there, go out and, you know, if you want better conflict, do that, create some space for everyone's priorities.
Yeah, this really comes down to like the ability to give and receive feedback, right? Mm-hmm. To address issues. And conflict itself doesn't mean there's a lack of love, right? It just means that we need to learn how to better understand each other and to be able to give and to receive that feedback with our spouse. Again, another sign of a strong and healthy relationship. You got a bonus one. It really goes though into being open and being able to, you know, have the openness, trust, ability to share anything, as well as the ability to give and receive feedback around sometimes tense or sensitive things. So if you guys want more help like that, let us know in the comments, say me, and we will definitely help you understand how you can have the ability to give and receive feedback and to reduce some of the tension around conflict and be able to increase the love between you. All right. So let us know what you enjoyed in this podcast episode. What stood out to you? What kind of a difference is this making in your life? We love to hear and read from you guys. So thank you for sharing that with us. All right. So thank you for joining us today. And next week, we're going to share with you how to reignite and deepen your emotional connection. Great. Thank you, Mark. Awesome. And we look forward to talking to you guys again very soon.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.